Hi, I'm Danielle Karmanis. I'm so happy you're here with me and my trailer, Lucy. Welcome back to Karma Has Spoken. There's nothing better than curling up with a good book. Well, unless you're doing it with a great group of girls while listening to an author and an unforgettable location while sipping cocktails and eating fabulous food. Author Amy Heimroll has curated the most magical literary experience. Amy!
Thank you! That's amazing!
Where do we begin? Oh. Okay, so first tell me about the Shady Ladies Literary Society.
Well, we started 2 years ago with like a group of 35 women in a cemetery. I had this idea that if we could bring emerging women authors to Detroit, pair them with women bartenders and chefs, we could do this really cool dinner party, have a lot of fun, really promote women who weren't necessarily getting all of the attention from the publishing world, because then when it's your first time, like, you know, it's just hard. And maybe convince the publishing world that Detroit is worth sending authors to, because I kept being told, like, can people even read in Detroit? Like, true statement.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding. Because I'm an author. I wrote the book Detroit Hustle, and it was my first book. And so when I was trying to figure out my book tour, publishers and libraries and bookstores were like, we'd love to have you, but unless you've already got people here or family, we can't guarantee you're going to bring in enough people to sell enough books, so we don't do events. And then publishers telling me, well, why would we even do anything in Detroit? Like, again, can you even read there? And I was like, well, we're going to solve this problem.
So how did it go from this idea to a reality that now has thousands of members, right? I signed up yesterday. I logged on. I have my membership. Before we started recording, I was asking you to save me a spot at your next session. But I'm going to be right at my computer to make sure I don't miss my spot, because what you've created is so exciting. So tell us how it became a reality and how it's grown. And, you know, you're so casual about, you know, I had this idea to bring in female authors and have some cocktails and some food, but it's so much bigger than that. So what is the whole experience? And you meet in cemeteries.
So it started in the cemetery, the first one, because it was my first idea of what a cool location could be. And I just thought, well, we'll try it and see if it works. As I also teach journalism and entrepreneurship at Michigan State. Yeah. So I do a whole lot of things. And one of the things I always teach my students is sometimes you just take that first step. If you think about trying to scale the mountain in one step, you'll never get there. But if you just think, what's that first piece I can do? And for me, that first piece was like, we could do a picnic for whoever decides they want to come. I don't know if it'll be 7 people or 40 people or 100 people. And we'll just do that and see if people want it. And they did. And they asked for more. And so we did the next one. And now 2 years later, we're more than 2,000 people on the emailing list. We've done 10 events. We've had Tara Westover in town. We've had Tomi Adeyemi, who wrote Children of Blood and Bone, which is being turned into a movie and was like on all the late night shows. She's like 23 and we all just love her to death and also hate her because she's so perfect and amazing. But so it's just grown to that. And we realized that what we aren't is a book club. Right? We're not just a book club. What we are is a platform for elevating women's voices and stories. And so now we have a thing called Chemistry Club, where we pair women scientists and bartenders. So the scientist comes and talks about her research. The bartender makes a cocktail based on the research. And then we all get to spend the afternoon drinking and talking science. Yes. And so how many different ways can we create a situation to elevate women's stories, get their stories out there further? Because I think that if we come together around food and cocktails, around sort of hospitality and graciousness, it helps us bridge maybe gaps in sort of a polarized world.
Going back to, you mentioned being a professor at Michigan State and you're teaching journalism and entrepreneurship. You said you always tell your students, just take that first step, right? So are you teaching that in entrepreneurship or journalism?
Both. Actually. So, because sometimes in journalism, we can get afraid to pick up the phone and just call the source. Or you're like, I don't even know how I would tackle that story. And we can get so caught up in how big it could be that we don't just take the first step to start working our way forward. So I teach it in journalism and in entrepreneurship. They call it the minimum viable product. Like, what's the absolute minimum you could do to get it in the market to test it? Don't wait till it's perfect. Get it out there and see what your audience wants, because maybe they just want cocktails. So why do dinner if all they want is cocktails? And so you can learn from your audience. And I have found from my audience that we have the three pillars. It's the book, it's the dinner, it's the cocktail. So dinner / cocktail and location. And they're all coming for one of those three things. One of them is a star, but they come back for the community. So everybody tells me, like, I came because I was interested in the author, but I've been back 3, 4, 5 times now because I've met some of my best friends here.
So what is the experience like?
So you buy your ticket and, you know, you're told where you're going to be. And so like this last one, we were back celebrating our birthday at Elmwood Cemetery.
So do you wait to release the location?
Sometimes we do. Sometimes okay. we don't. It just depends. Like when we were on stage at Shane Park, we waited to release that. But so you know where you're coming. You come. The first thing you do is like you get a cocktail that's been custom made for the book and you get to mill around and meet Shady Ladies and the author in person. Sometimes we have other female entrepreneurs there who are selling their wares, whether it's linens or jewelry or whatever. So we try to support women's owned businesses here in town. At the end of sort of what we call happy hour, then we sort of set up the performance, which the author usually reads for 5 or 10 minutes. And then I do Q&A and conversation with her for about, you know, half an hour. We have these sort of pop quizzes we do that are super fun, designed to get inside her mind. And we don't tell the author. So they come in and I'm like, I'm a professor. And now it's time for a quiz. And then they look stricken. And then I'm like, no, these are fun.
Amy,
like,
you're amazing.
So we do that. And then the people who are staying for dinner, because we have two kinds of tickets. One's for the whole event, including a dinner that's a 5-course meal with a local chef. And that can be an expensive ticket to do too often. So we also have the lower cost ticket for people who just want to come for cocktails and the performance.
And so is the book released ahead of time or?
You get a signed copy of the book when you come. So you okay. don't even have to have read the book. You just come, you get the book there, you're signed. Because it really helps with the publishers. If I say, I'm going to have 100 to 200 women at this event and a book comes with a ticket. And so I'm guaranteeing like 200 book sales. They're like, oh, wait, this isn't just some like little girls thing. I've been told that, like, oh, isn't that just like little girls thing and you do like 4 or 5 books? And I'm like, no, here's what we're doing. Like, this is really about empowering women and we do a killer party as well.
And so can men come?
We love our shady gentlemen. Mm-hmm. So we do encourage them to come and we have a lot who do attend our events. We just say, we don't put you on stage.
Yeah.
I should also say that when we talk about shady ladies and women, we identify that as anybody who considers themselves or identifies as a woman. So we're trans friendly, gender non-binary, everything. So we welcome everybody to attend. But in terms of the authors and scientists we put on stage, they are people who identify as a woman.
Is there a cost for membership?
There is no cost for membership, but we are looking at how do we grow in 2020 because we've sort of, you know, have such robust demand here. We're getting requests from Atlanta and Denver and other cities to bring it there. So we're figuring out how do we grow and what does that look like? And maybe a membership and maybe a podcast and maybe more different kinds of events. So yeah, we're really thinking about how to bring the Shady Ladies brand bigger and better and badder everywhere.
And so what types of books do you look for?
I tend to do nonfiction and literary fiction. I love, you know, romance and sci-fi. I don't know as much about genre, so I just don't do those genres, not because I don't like them, but I just don't know them. So for what we choose, it tends to be books that I like sweeping family sagas. I like a good beach read, but no matter what it is, it takes us into a world we don't normally get exposure to. Whether that is we had Ninth Street Women with Mary Gabriel and the 5 women of the abstract expressionist movement from the 1950s and 60s, total nonfiction. But by the end of it, I was like, oh, she's my BFF. Like, I was like, totally.
She was lucky.
And my husband was like, who are you talking about? And I was like, well, I mean, Joan, of course. And he was like, isn't she dead? I was like, so what? She's my new BFF. But just sort of books that bring us into worlds we don't normally access. But I like us sometimes we'll have a real smart book and sometimes I'm like, well, could we have a little Ellen Hildebrand? She got a new book out. I like a good beach read. So we try to really go across a lot of different genres.
Amy, you are so amazing. So where can our listeners find you? Where can they get their membership?
So they can find us at ShadyLadiesLiterarySociety.com or on Instagram at ShadyLadiesLit.
I just love talking to you. I wish we had hours. I brought my whole stack of what I hoped would be my summer reading that I want to go through with you and ask your advice on what I should be reading. My last question, do you like reading ebooks, hardcover, or paperback?
So I read them all. I'm an indiscriminate, promiscuous reader. I tend to read my trash on my Kindle because then nobody can see what Smart. I'm reading. I tend to read a lot of hardcover just because I do so much editing on computer that it's nice to give my eyes a break sometimes, but I don't care how it comes as long as the stories come.
Okay. I love talking to you. Thank you for coming over and playing in Lucy. And hey, maybe you can have one of your parties here in my garden by Lucy. I would love to host one.
Well, let's make that happen.
Let's
do it. That seems perfect.
All right. I would love it. Okay. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
Some say that seeing is believing, but I believe our next guest has a vision that surpasses anything you've ever seen. Born with cystic fibrosis and blind since age 25, Cordelia Grimm beats to her own drum or bass in a punk band and paints a picture that will touch your soul. Hi, Cordelia.
Why, hello. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for coming over. You look very pretty.
And so do you. A little blind humor to get us started with this.
But So yes, for our listeners, so you are blind.
I am.
So how long have you been blind?
11 years.
Let me back up a little bit because there is so much that we have to cover. So this was my opening question. So Cordelia, what's new?
Well,
any big changes in your life? Wink, wink.
A big eye wink. So I am the artist formerly known as Brendan Patrick. I am transitioning. So that's a big thing. That I guess people find that to be big. I don't know. It's just part of my life. With that being said, I did come out like 10 years ago. So.
Oh, you did?
My inner circle is like, yeah, big deal. This is.
I mean, there's a lot in there. So what was that like? Tell me about coming out. And was that before or after you were blind?
After I was blind.
Okay.
I do have cystic fibrosis. I've had a bilateral lung transplant. So there's a lot of issues going into, besides transitioning, my whole entire life. I'm used to kind of being the underachiever, overachiever. Mm. I mean, I guess underachiever because I never do what people really expect. I kind of have more punk rock platform that I think's cool. Maybe not everybody thinks it's
I cool. think it's super cool. And I have to tell you, as I was researching you, and the word that kept coming to mind is courage. Do you hear that word a lot when people around you?
No.
No? Well, you should.
Oh.
Because I thought, you know, and I was thinking, you know, in this day and age, and I feel like, you know, there's so much around depression and anxiety, which of course are very real things, right? And you know, I have a stack of books here, and as I'm walking through the bookstore or even the book section at Target, there are so many self-help books, and there are people looking for their purpose, and there are people who are feeling so lost. And again, these are very real things, right? And these are very important to people. And then I read your story, right? And I go, holy smokes, right? Born with cystic fibrosis.
Whoa, you don't have to curse.
I know. Now we're going to, now they're going to have to mark this podcast as explicit. But I'm thinking, you know, you were born with challenges, you lost your sight, and you came out to your family, you've gone through all these things, and you are courageous and dynamic.
We haven't even going.
You keep going. You're so darn fearless, and you're an artist, and you're unstoppable. And I thought, geez, I mean, here you, every obstacle that could pop up, it pops up, and you just, you paint it and make it pretty.
I get bored. Sometimes I feel like life is going a little too easy, so I have to shake things up a little bit.
So going back to when you came out.
So yeah, I mean, it's been 10 years now. And when I initially came out, you know, I did everything that every trans girl does, start to get laser hair removal on my face and start to do everything, start to see a therapist and go to support groups. And, you know, my therapist was like, well, you know, with everything that is going on with your health issues, you know, you'll never be able to transition. So that put me in a deep slump. And when I get depressed, I get productive. I start painting more. I start playing more music. And I take on more projects. And that's kind of what I've done the past few years. And finally, you know, one of my best friends started living with me. And she's like, let's figure this out. You know, it's kind of a new year. And I think we could give this a try. And especially with a lot of light shining on the trans community these days in the past few years. She's like, you know, I think you should try this again. I know, you know, you have rough days and this, it's all because of this. So she helped me get a lot of resources down, and I got a new therapist who's a younger therapist, and she was totally cool with everything and totally on board. She's like, no, I got this. And so yeah, I got the thumbs up from all my doctors, my cystic fibrosis doctor, my transplant doctor, and my therapist. So yeah, I finally got the thumbs up. So now I can move forward and try not to be depressed.
What was your support group like? And when you came out, was your family, were family and friends, were they surprised?
My little brother's my best friend, and he's totally cool with it. He's whatever you need. You know, he's always there for me. You know, my parents are a little, they kind of didn't really know what to say. I mean, they're on board now, but I mean, I guess it's an initial, I guess, shock. But no, all my friends, you know, I can say I have 30 best friends, and every single one of them were there and rallied behind me. And I think I'm very lucky, you know, from losing my vision, dealing with CF and, you know, transitioning now. I'm very lucky to have the friends that I've surrounded myself with, my island of misfit toys.
Those are your friends?
Yeah.
I love that. I love misfit toys. Yeah. Anyone who's too normal is a little suspicious to me.
I don't understand them. They don't understand me.
No, there's no such thing as normal, right? I always say that. And I've always felt like, you know, there's no such thing as normal. There's right. just happy. And who's to say what happy looks like, right?
My mother will be very proud of me for saying this on a podcast. Normal is just a setting on the dryer.
Say it again.
No.
I'll give a little shout out to your mom. That is so great. So what, I mean, there's so many things we want to cover and we want to talk about your art. But going back to as you're transitioning, so you came out 10 years ago. And that you are doing this, you have the right team in place. And so how long does the entire process take?
Well, 38 years for me.
Oh. I mean, so in this moment, are you, I mean, you look beautiful. Oh, I love your dress. Is this, but it's true. And who's helping you get dressed? And do you have a style?
Yes, I have an assistant. My assistant is actually my best friend. And
is this the girl that you're talking about that you lived with? Or
No, a different friend.
Okay.
But no, I mean, she takes me to all my adulting, you know, take me to the bank and groceries and all that nonsense, but also helps me put together outfits. And, you know, like today before I came here, I had to send 5 different photos. Like, is my makeup okay? She's like, your head's cut off. She's like, try again. So, yeah.
So are you doing your own makeup?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, when I do real events, I hire professionals, but yeah.
Oh, you should do makeup tutorials.
I don't know.
That would be amazing. I mean, you look really pretty. Thank you. So what is your process for doing your makeup? Is there a part of doing your makeup that you like or don't like
I'm
doing?
I'm scared of eyeliner.
I don't blame you.
I mean, I want to, but I'm scared of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere. it becomes cheek liner, forehead liner, you know.
Have you done eyelash extensions yet?
Yeah, I mean, when I get my makeup professionally done. Yeah.
No, the permanent ones. So, I get my lashes done maybe every 3 weeks.
Tell me all your secrets.
I will. That's where I'm going with this. Cordelia, it's just me, you, and a few thousand people listening right now.
Typical.
So let's see. I like a good lip stain, right? So, because I'm super lazy about putting lipstick on. So, I like that, and it'll stay on all day. Do you use a blotter for your foundation and all that to get make sure everything is well blended?
Honestly, I don't know anything I'm doing in life.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like brushes that feel good.
Yeah, I have my foundation, you know, my basics.
And get your eyebrows tattooed. Well, you're wearing sunglasses, so yeah, okay. No, you have nice eyebrows.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then once you get them,
what's
it called, microbladed?
Microblading, yeah.
Microblading
on
your eyebrows.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you don't have to worry about it, and they're always shaped. Get that and the lashes, and you're good to go. Yeah, so put that on your list for your Motley Crue.
So you can drive me to all these?
Oh, yeah, with my 4 kids in the car. You'll love that so much. Auntie Cordelia needs to get her lashes done today.
Auntie Cordelia is a mess. She needs all the help.
Are you still playing in your punk band?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's that like?
Oh, terrible.
Why?
No, it's going really good. We're talking about putting out another 7-inch, and we're also talking about doing a video coming up.
How long have you been playing together?
I think 6.5 years now. We're called The Wretched Sights. A little bit of play on my vision, you know.
Ba-dum-bum.
So my biggest fear is just falling off stage these days. So.
Yeah. So how does that work? How do you set it up to make sure that you're comfortable on stage?
What I actually do is I get like a rug, like a bath mat, mm-hmm. and I would just place it like a foot or two like from the edge of the stage so I can kind of feel it and hope I don't fall off.
Years ago, my husband and I were in Las Vegas and we were watching Steve Wynn, who was giving a keynote, and we were in the front row and he was losing his sight and he kept on coming within inches of falling off the stage. And I think
fun.
Pete was on the edge of his seat the entire time, prepared to catch him. So the band, so how did you guys all find each other? And have you always, what type of music did you grow up playing music?
Oh, yeah. I started playing trumpet in middle school. I'm a band nerd, art nerd, you know. So, yeah,
but
I started playing
trumpet.
I
think that's cool. I mean, it's cool now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I started playing trumpet like in middle school and all through high school, marching and symphony band. And
you were in the marching band?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
cool.
Terrible.
Oh.
No. That's no, cool. It's fun. I love
that's
bands.
A lot of work.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I actually had a spinal fusion and was in a body cast and missed my whole sophomore year of high school. And all my friends in the high school band, they pulled their money and bought me my first bass guitar. So that's actually how I started playing bass.
Oh, Cordelia, you're so darling. I mean, you have great friends.
Yeah,
because you're a good person.
I can't complain. So yeah, no, I mean, I play in this band with my singer who's been in tons of bands with me. This is probably our sixth band together. And we lost our bass player. So we tried to recruit a new bass player, but he decided he wanted to play guitar. And so, yeah, it's just kind of picking up parts here and there. And so, yeah, we just lost our drummer a year ago. He moved out west and we just picked up a new drummer.
And how often are you playing gigs?
Maybe like once a month. Like we're all old now, so everybody has adult lives.
Right? My husband always says that. Like with professional athletes, it's not the like when they have to retire, right? It's not the conditioning, right? It's the recovery, right? Yeah. Like as you get older, I'm just tired. So for our listeners, where can they find your band? Do you guys have a website?
Yeah, I mean, right now we just have our Facebook page, The Wretched Sights. There's links to all of our music, but you can find all of our music for free on Bandcamp.com. It's just Wretched Sights, so on Bandcamp.
So what were you like when you were growing up? So you said you were into band and art. Have you always been a painter?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Art was, you know, growing up, besides having cystic fibrosis, I also grew up wearing leg braces. So with that being said, I didn't have many friends. So on the playground when I was a child, you know, my best friend was my sketchbook. And while all the kids were playing, I was doodling, drawing. Come to find out, like, I was working on my craft all these years. So, I mean, it sounds sad, but I mean, I guess I was just honing my craft. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, art has always been number one for me. It's the love of my life. Mm. So,
and have you ever tried any other type of art? So I was watching some videos as I was researching you and I was looking online and you're a painter and I want to talk about your process and how all of that works. But have you ever been a sculptor or?
I was a tattoo artist before I lost my vision.
Well, so you're not a tattoo artist anymore.
I mean,
you?
I've done a few since I've been blind.
Have you?
I don't know how they turned out. I mean, yeah, I've done a handful. So that kind of like really molded a lot into my craft and like a lot of my style is pulled from tattooing and kind of more traditional and like new school. And I mean, with that being said, I only did it a handful of years before I got really sick and my lung collapsed a few times and was on oxygen for a few years. So, I mean, I would probably still be doing it now if I had vision, but I mean, whatever. I'm super happy with where I'm at.
And you have the sleeves. Your tattoos are beautiful, by the way. So
they're
what
still
are they?
There?
Yeah. So your left arm is...
It's all like the universal monsters, like Frankenstein and the Mummy and Dracula. So.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh.
Is there a reason for tattoos?
No, I don't know. I don't have any, so...
It's better that way. They're trash.
Oh.
But no, I don't know. Just monster movies always really clicked for me. I mean, it's funny saying that now that I'm blind. Like, they don't mean anything to me anymore.
But when you were growing up, were you watching the Munsters and the Addams Family? Was it those type of monsters that you, did you relate to them? Well, I mean,
there
must be something a little deeper if you wanted them on your arm.
Definitely. I mean, I guess, you know, they're all outcasts and I always identified more as an outcast. So they were my peeps. They were my homies. Mm. Is that still relevant, that term?
Homies?
I don't know.
Well, you just made it cool again. It is now, Cordelia says. So wait, and then what are these on your right arm?
I have some Mars Attack stuff on my arm. And that was, I was in high school when that movie came out. Well, everybody was seeing Titanic 7 times. I was seeing Mars Attacks with nobody else in the theater. So.
Nice. It's kind of better, right?
I suppose. I don't know.
Titanic's
I never saw Titanic.
Almost everyone dies.
Yeah. What?
Spoiler alert. So what is your art now?
Oh, I don't know. Lowbrow? I don't know. I think a lot of it, you know, kind of going through what we've always talked about, pulling a lot from punk rock and a lot from classic monster movies, I feel like that all kind of gets cultivated in one. I loved, like, growing up just looking at records and, like, the covers of records and just spending those hours in a record store just flipping through and looking at all the cool artwork on the covers and going to art museums and pulling art from everywhere. reading Juxtapose magazines and just wishing I was that artist in there. So, I mean, there were, I guess I just pull it from every aspect of my travels and everything. It's such a hard question to answer, really.
When you're creating now, what are you trying to create? What do you see in your head?
Like, I find that I actually really plan stuff out a lot more since losing my vision. I actually paint before I put the brush to the canvas. I actually kind of map it out in my brain and try to figure out, like, okay, maybe I need to switch it around this, maybe angle it a little bit more and flip it, rotate it.
So does that process look like meditation?
I suppose it would be a meditation. I guess I do lay in bed and think of a lot. And in the shower, I come up with a lot of ideas when I'm just kind of zoning out and in my head. So besides like doing that, I've been doing a new technique the past few months. I've been buying a lot of toys and I've been just kind of feeling the dimension of the toys and kind of trying to copy that onto canvas. So that's actually been really successful for me. So
what type of toys?
A lot of Star Wars toys, a lot of animals. I've been buying a lot of animal toys, just like giraffes and elephants. And those have been really good for me to just kind of get the proportion and dimension of them.
So when you're sitting down and you're going to work on a piece and you have it mapped out, you have the vision kind of finalized in your head, right?
Yes.
And then you sit down and then how does it work from there? How are you finding your materials? What is the process of then creating the piece?
So I guess let's back up to me having an assistant. My assistant will take me to the art store and I'll say, hey, you know, I need to buy some lime green. I need to buy a black. I need to buy, you know, some white paint. So we'll get back home and I'll start labeling all my paints. I'll braille them out and put braille on the on the tops of on the lids. And basically, I just use a puff paint intended for t-shirts. So when it dries, it raises up. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of do an outline of my puff paint. And it's kind of like a coloring book. I just try to stay in between the lines at that point.
So how did you learn Braille?
I went to blind school. It's a center out in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. It had 7 different classes throughout the day, like a mobility class teaching me how to cross the street without being hit by a car. Let's see, what else? Teaching me how to cook, teaching me Braille, teaching me, you know, resources that are out there for blind people. All the basics, you know, blind survival camp.
Was there anything that you were learning that was surprisingly easy and anything that was surprisingly hard?
Braille was easier than I had expected.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I had expected, you know, because I played guitar for 20-something years. You know, I'm like, oh, no, I'm a calloused. But no, it was easier than I had expected because once you figure out the technique, there's a few tricks to it. So yeah, Braille is actually easier than it is. It's just a matter of learning.
Is it almost like reading music? Is there a rhythm to it?
Yeah, there is.
So do you read Braille books? Is that interesting to you?
No.
You just kind of use it? Okay. Have you ever been a big reader?
Oh, yeah. No, okay. I read like now, 4 or 5 books a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So are you listening to books on tape?
Yep, audiobooks.
Yeah. Okay. What was surprisingly difficult to get acclimated to? Or what was the most difficult during blind boot camp?
Sleep schedule is terrible. I sleep like 2 or 3 hours a day. With that being said, I get a lot of painting done. So I guess it has its benefits.
Have you always been like that?
No, since I lost my vision, just I have 0% light perception. So everything's pitch black for me. So it's very hard for me to kind of acclimate to nighttime, to daytime. So,
but doesn't your body get tired?
Oh, yeah. I'm always exhausted.
No.
But, you know, coffee does the trick. Pots after pots after pots of coffee.
And then where do you see, what is the future of your art? How do you want it to evolve? And how often are you painting?
Oh, I try to make it a point to paint every day, even if I'm not feeling up to it. You know, I still deal with chronic pain, dealing with cystic fibrosis issues. But I just make it a point to step into my studio every day, even if I just start an outline or just start framing a painting that's already done. As long as I step in there, I'm happy and I feel kind of successful. But I typically paint just about every day unless I'm having a really rough day.
And so what does a typical day look like for you?
Let's see. I try to get up around 7 or 8 in the morning. Try to put down a lot of coffee. I put on my painting overalls and I sit around and hope that motivates me to work. It usually doesn't. And then I start playing guitar and I'm like, okay, I'm doing something artsy. You know, I try to write a lot of music too. And if I'm stuck painting, and that kind of breaks the mold for me and kind of shakes up my artistic needs. And eventually I'll try to paint like in the afternoon and I'll put it down and go grab something to eat. But yeah, a lot of my painting is done like at nighttime, typically around 11 or 12, I'll get started.
Seriously. And do you showcase your work?
Yeah. I do paintings everywhere, gallery shows everywhere. Anywhere that will have me.
And so do you have a website for your art or where we can follow you and find out?
Right now, I'm mainly just using my Facebook.
Okay. So. Okay. And you're working on a documentary?
Well, personally, no.
Well, okay. Someone's working on a documentary. And we can't say the full name of it because we can't say any swear words or we have to mark this podcast as explicit.
Can't but see. Shh. Okay, got it.
It.
What? So yeah, we've been working on this documentary for 6 years. One of my best friends growing up, we met when we were teenagers, Rob Cusnow, he just happened to be a director. So I called him up after losing my vision once I started painting again and said to him, like, hey, you know, can you help me make a short video? I just wanted like a little 2 or 3 minute video to put up on YouTube just to help me get gallery shows. I was like, you know, maybe we could show like how I paint. I was like, I think this might be kind of interesting. You know, I think galleries might be kind of interested. You know, him and his business partner, Chris Rosick, they came out and they started filming me. And then they said, you know, I think we have something. So we tried to shoot for this Vans, the skate company. They were doing this documentary competition that was like a 10-minute version. And we kind of missed the deadline. Mm-hmm. So we decided, hey, let's just try to make a full length. I think we have more than just a 10-minute version. So yeah, we've been working on it for 6 years and we're looking to hopefully wrap it up in the next soon.
And so how long will the full length be? Maybe
I think they're shooting for like an hour and a half. You know, my role is really just to call them like, hey, I have this event. You guys want to come film? So, I mean, that's not really my part.
So the documentary is really about telling your story and your experiences?
Yeah. I mean, it's them following me around as I travel and do gallery shows across the states and take road trips. And like, I just got back from Idaho where I was working with the NFB, National Federation of the Blind. And I spoke at a conference and I also did a workshop teaching blind kids art. So, yeah.
Oh, you're kidding. So are you doing a lot of public speaking or motivational speaking?
Yeah. I don't know how good it is, but I'm still doing it.
And based on talking to you now, I'm sure it's fantastic. So how often are you out speaking?
Maybe like just a couple times a year. I mean, maybe 5 or 6 times a year.
Okay. And what was it like working with the kids?
It was good. I guess it's interesting myself being blind and most of my audiences have vision. So I'm used to getting praise and compliments and everybody's like, oh my God, you're amazing. I'm like, oh, I know. Thank you. Well, blind kids do not care. They're like, wait, what are you doing? I don't get it.
Right.
So, I mean, it was definitely an eye-opener for myself.
So what were you like as a kid?
I was very shy. I was actually really shy.
And how many siblings do you have?
Just one. I have a little brother that's 2 years younger than me. But okay. I come from a huge family. My mother's one of 12 and there's
you're kidding.
30-something of us cousins.
And where did you grow up?
On the east side in Detroit, and then we moved to Warren when I went to middle school and high school.
And so did you have all of your cousins and your extended family around you when you were growing up?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
great.
We
have a pretty close family. So, I mean, they were kind of my extended community.
Tell me a little bit more about what you were like as a kid. So you're cultivating your art.
Yeah.
You know, at some point you said you were, when the kids were playing and you were sketching and you were by yourself and you were shy. And then, you know, as a teenager, you were in the band and the marching band and your friends rallied and they bought you a guitar, I think, or bass, right? So, you know, at some point you became very social, right? And you obviously now are a great friend because you have a great crew, a great support system around you. So tell me more about like when you were growing up and...
I didn't really have many friends. Like I said, once I got to high school, I started like falling into myself. I mean, the first few years were more, let's go play laser tag and play Risk at the end of the night. So it was never that cool. But I think eventually once I started volunteering and getting involved in more groups and getting more involved in band and art, people started seeing like, oh, you're
cool.
You're talented, which is still hard for me to say.
Where would you volunteer?
Well, just signing up for all the, you know, I was in my church youth group, which is weird for me to say out loud. So yeah, I did that, and I did a few other groups in high school.
And then in your 20s, did you go to school?
No. Having cystic fibrosis and growing up in the 90s, I thought I was going to die like 19, 20, 21. So I had scholarships for college, but I kind of didn't take them because I'm really smart. You know, I guess with my life expectancy being so short, I was like, what's the point? I'm going to go try to live my life and try to have fun with my friends. And I mean, poor planning now, now that I'm 38. So that kind of really molded a lot of me playing in bands, playing in 2-3 bands at a time and kind of doing that and kind of making that a priority and falling in more into art. And so I guess if I didn't have that, I would have went down a totally different path in life. You know, who knows, maybe I'd be an engineer or a doctor or something. I don't know.
Well, I can't imagine how that would, you know, growing up and thinking in the back of your mind that you might not have a long life. I mean, that's a lot to live with, that, you know, how that changes your perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, that would, you know, and did you know growing up that there was a chance at some point that you would lose your vision?
No, I mean, that was just complications. That was kind of out of left field. So fun.
But you're so optimistic. You know, and yeah. Have you always had such a positive outlook?
Yeah, and I think that's also my family and my friends. I mean, if I'm not optimistic, what am I? Like, what else do I have to do? I don't know.
Well, I love the way you keep moving forward and you have these plans and you have your art and your music. And so what's next? Where are you going to take all of this? And you do the public speaking. Do you have any entrepreneurial ambitions?
I'd like to open up my own gallery one day. That's down the road, and I have to try to figure that out better than me just sitting in a empty room with my paintings hung up. So I'm more the typical artist. I probably need a business manager or something. So
what are the reactions like to your artwork?
That's very fascinating for me to do gallery shows, because most of the time when I'm done with that piece, I forget it instantly. I've already moved on to, you know, 7 pieces later.
So how long does it take to create a piece?
I try to get it done within a day or two. Otherwise, I just completely blank and forget what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when I do a showing, you know, these are pieces that have been done for a month or two. And I totally forget what I've done. I'm like, okay, I know there's an elephant. I know there's an ant or whatever the pieces may be. But I don't remember what colors I used. I don't remember what kind of shading or anything. So I think it's very interesting to hear people's perception and people's interpretation. It tends to be a little more interesting to me how people perceive my work than how I perceive my work.
Mm. And how do you change? Do you have a pattern of creating your work? Does it change from piece to piece? So you said now you're buying a lot of toys and you're doing a lot of animals. And will you do an animal or a toy? Or, you know, I read that you meditate. And I asked you earlier if as you are visualizing the pieces, if that's a form of meditation. I mean, are you kind of meditating? Is that when the ideas or the inspirations come to you?
Definitely. I do, you know, my stretching, my meditating, and just thinking and trying to clear my head. And sometimes stuff pops up. And what was the question? I forget what to answer. So yeah, let's leave it at that. Let's move on to the next question.
No, about your art. And is there a pattern and how you're coming up with your inspirations?
Yeah. I
like, how did you start buying toys as an inspiration for your art?
I don't know. I think I just assumed it would work, so I made it work. Mm-hmm. I think I was just trying to push myself and trying to figure out what can I do next. And I think that's kind of part of my art too, is how can I grow? How can I make it better? How can I evolve and do something new with it? You know, because I can only paint so many, you know, ghouls, which right. was kind of my initial starting off point. And I just wanted to cultivate and make my art a little bit better than the last piece.
And so do you think you'll always be a painter? Do you see yourself evolving into other art forms, sculpting or?
I feel like painting's my heart. Like I want to sculpt, but they never turn out good. I mean, maybe they are, but I just don't feel it. I try, but I feel like painting really clicks with me.
I think creating your art is a form of therapy, right? It's therapeutic.
Oh, absolutely.
And so what else are you doing to take care of yourself? And I had asked you earlier what a typical day is like. And so are you meditating each day? Are you
drinking water? Yes. yeah, definitely.
A quick aqua break, a quick little hydration break.
Yeah. I mean, besides like doing all
that. Do you want some more Swedish fish?
Oh, I'm kidding. Okay. Thank you so much. Try to cut back.
I also have gummy bears.
Oh, stop.
I know.
No, I mean, I try to jump on my exercise bike and weights, but nobody wants to hear about that. That's boring.
Well, I mean, maybe they do. It could be an inspiration to somebody who's listening right now thinking, you know, oh, that reminds me, I really need to keep exercising. You don't know. I mean, everything about your story is so inspirational and your perseverance that, you know, I want to know everything about what a day looks like for you. I want to know, you know, as you're transitioning, you know, what's next and
try to get taller, I guess. Oh. I don't know. Like, funnier, wittier, I don't know, a better artist.
Oh,
there's so many ways to improve my life.
But I think it's so important to have balance and keep, you know, positive attitude and keep the perseverance. And, you know, meditation is so important. And 15 years ago, I started a nonprofit that works with kids in the city. And we teach them yoga and nutrition and meditation. We actually initially were just trying to battle the epidemic of childhood obesity. And yoga was just one of the pieces we were introducing to the kids. And we were shocked that the kids loved the yoga and meditation, right? And we thought, this doesn't make sense. And as we started to collect a bit more data and then doing some hard data, we realized it made perfect sense because we were giving them a chance to be still in a safe environment, which is something they had never had before. And I think, you know, when I think about your life and, you know, as I said, when I was researching you and, you know, it's hard. And for our listeners, you know, it's hard not to try and understand or relate to your experience. And the reality is you can't relate to your experience. None of us can, right? And I think anyone, the thought of losing your vision, you think it would be almost unbearable. And when I'm talking to you and your energy and your perseverance, I'm so curious and trying to almost like strip away these layers of the onion, right? And say, getting to the core of you and how inspirational you are that these things have happened that most people maybe would not come back from. And you have not just come back from them, you've thrived in your own way. And I'm curious if that kind of determination is who you've always been. Or if it's, you know, around meditation, if you have to be very intentional each day in moving forward. There was a question somewhere in there.
Boredom.
Sorry.
Boredom.
Oh, I was boring?
No, not you. No, I'm saying boredom motivates me.
Was my question boring? Was my tangent, was it too much?
No.
Cordelia, are you just being kind?
No. The floor is yours.
Oh, that's right. This is about you, not me. Okay.
I'm kidding. No.
No, but there was a compliment in all there. And I think for me and for our listeners, and you know, that's something special that you have that makes you shine and keep laughing and keep being you in the face of adversity. I want to know what that is. And that's why I'm asking you, you know, about the meditation. And, you know, I said earlier, there is so much anxiety and depression and loss of purpose or people feeling like they don't have a sense of purpose. And as, like I said, I was researching and learning about you and now being around you, I feel like your story is so powerful and it is so inspirational. So, you know, what makes you you? And when you're public speaking, what are you telling your audience?
I mean, I joke by saying boredom, but it's true. I mean, I can't just sit there. I can't sit back. And I know I have so many blind people that I mentor now. And, you know, my number one thing I try to tell them is find a hobby. And you don't have to sell your hobby. You don't have to do anything with it as long as you're learning something and have an eventual end. Let's say you start to play an instrument. I want you to learn a song. And so you're learning something and you're accomplishing something, whether it's learning an instrument, whether it's knitting. You know, I want you to knit, let's say, a scarf. So you have an end goal. You have something that you've accomplished. So for me, I can't just sit there. I have this fire inside of me that I just have this drive and determination. I wish I could turn it off, but I can't. Mm. So I just, it's boredom. It's boredom. That's it. It's boredom. And I need to keep moving forward. Pardon me. So, I mean, a lot of it is more just what can I do to make all my work better? And I just have this persistence where I guess I'm stubborn, maybe a little pretentious, but I think that might be a good thing as an artist.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, my view is I keep saying the same thing. Just how do I make myself better?
So. There's an author, Amy Cuddy, who did a TED Talk, something along the lines of the Superwoman power stance, right? And it was basically saying, fake it till you make it, right? So
well, that's what I've been doing for years.
So she was saying, you know, if you walk in a room and you're feeling uncertain, you know, shoulders back, chin up, and, you know, and fake it till you make it, right? And like kind of put your physical body into kind of the shape. And so I think, you know, her messaging is very interesting and it's very inspirational for a lot of people. She wrote an article a few months ago that I forget the exact title, but it was asking what is more important, happiness or a sense of purpose? And I guess the question was, you know, what is more important, happiness or purpose? And she was making the case in her article that a sense of purpose is more important than happiness. And I absolutely agree. And I found myself kind of sharing that message with a lot of people. I was sharing it recently with someone who had just retired, or with family around someone who had just retired, saying, you know, hey, we have to find a sense of purpose for this person, right? And I get the value of that. And I think you would agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I recently just told both my parents I can't retire. That, you know, they're going to be in my business too much. But yeah, I think that's been me mentoring a lot of the people who have recently lost their vision is they're just lost. They have nothing to do. You know, they don't know how to use their computer anymore. They can barely figure out how to watch TV, and viewing TV is such a different experience now. And I mean, yeah, there's things out there like Netflix has, for all of its original programming, has audio description on all their content. So that's, I mean, that's beautiful and that's
so
amazing.
So wait, but do you like that or is it annoying? Because my Apple TV is stuck on that feature, which I don't need. So it's a little, it kind of a lot. So for you, is that something that you appreciate? Obviously, corporations have a responsibility to create these resources for you and for people in our community, right? Are they hitting the mark or missing the mark?
For the most part, it's getting better. For instance, I just mentioned Netflix. Now all the movie theaters, like AMC and what is the other one? MJR, okay. They both have audio description for most of their big movies, just like a little headset that will clue us in what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to be able to get out and go to the movies and not have my friend try to fill me in on all the gaps.
Because people around you would hate that.
Oh, and they did. They did. And then, you know, eventually I stand up and pull out my cane. They're like, oh, okay.
Oh, Cordelia.
So, I mean, you know, it's the little things that are making it better. But I mean, you know, it's still not an easy world to be blind in.
Right, absolutely. So when you're mentoring, really, what are the biggest obstacles? What are the biggest challenges that you're kind of guiding them through? Because I'm sure it's not just about helping them create a sense of purpose, but I'm sure there's a lot of counseling that's involved in it as well.
Right? I think it's more me being relatable, and not only being relatable, but being successful as a blind person, somebody that they can look up to. And I can try to guide them down a path, but I'm kind of the unicorn. So it's, how do I say, just be a pretentious artist. But, you know, I was an artist before. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to say, like, yeah, just do that. Mm-hmm. Just play in a punk band. But, I mean, you know, these are all things that I've been doing for the past 25 years that I'm just blind now. I'm just kind of doing the same thing, a little bit different. So a lot of it is just listening, really trying to hear out what people are frustrated with and trying to give them some sort of coping skills. And like, this is how I approached it. You know, this is how I approach, you know, whether it's just cooking tips or every day, like how I approach doing laundry or, you know, little tasks like that stuff helps hearing it from somebody else who's already been through it.
Do you cook?
I mean, not good. Placing an order. I'm friends with a delivery driver. She just introduced her name. She's like,
is
I'm so
true?
Sorry. Yeah, she's like, I've been coming here for so many years.
So
I've never
what do you like to order?
It's embarrassing.
Why? Oh, nobody, I was about to say nobody's listening, but that's a horrible thing to say.
No, it's good. It's better this
Tons
way.
Tons of people are listening. What do you like to order?
Pizza's my guilty pleasure.
Oh, wow.
But it's everybody's guilty
pleasure. It really is.
So I don't feel so bad.
And what do you like to make?
Oh, No, I like to do like a good stir fry.
Well, okay.
Try to be good stir fry.
Uh-huh. So, what do you put in it?
I don't know. Like soy sauce and like tofu and like green beans and bok choy. I don't know. Whatever goes in a stir fry. Onions, broccoli.
Oh yeah, broccoli's good.
Yeah, that's in there.
Cordelia,
yeah.
You are so darling. Oh, thank you for coming
you.
Over.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anything else that you want? Anything we haven't covered?
No. I think that's everything.
We covered a lot, right? Well, I've loved meeting you. I loved learning about you, and you have such an incredible story. And I know your story of perseverance, and you're an inspiration to so many people. And just for me personally, learning about you so much over the last few days, just really applaud you. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
So. It's been days you've been dealing with this. I'm so sorry.
I loved every second.
I am so sorry.
You're a lot of fun to learn about.
Again, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Cordelia.
Thank you.
This has been the Karma Has Spoken podcast. If you like today's content, feel free to share our show by email, social media, or any other means. If you've got a question, comment, or other feedback, visit our website at karmahasspoken.com. Keep up with us by subscribing to Karma Has Spoken in your favorite podcast app, or follow Karma Has Spoken on social media. Karma Has Spoken is a production of Jag and Detroit Podcasts.